by summarizing what we've done yesterday. We talked about the factoring algorithm, that factoring is related to cryptography, that there's a that this problem seems to be hard classically, and we use it to hide information. And quantum computing is able to solve factoring easily. I didn't give you the count of number of gates that it takes, but I think it's n cubed the way that it goes. So it seems to be a reasonable way to solve and pose a threat to today's encryption. Last night, when I go to bed from time to time, I flick through this website called slashdot.org. It's a geeky website of computer scientists. And they had something on the RSA conference 2016. So RSA is a company that started from the factoring algorithm, and RSNA are for Rive, Shamir, and Adelman, the three people who got together and found this. And at the conference, they had a roundtable with the three of them, with two more, Diffie and Hellman, who got this year the Turing Award. The Turing Award is the equivalent of a Nobel Prize for computer scientists. And so we did talking about encryption and RSA and what was new in the last year. They were talking about the Apple, FBI things. And suddenly this question came in, but what about quantum computing? Do you have to worry about it? And it was quite interesting. So they don't want quantum computing to exist, these guys, because if it exists, RSA is out of the window. And so they were very defensive. And they said, oh yeah, it's not gonna happen in the next 5 years, without telling that. And they did mention that the NSA had said they wanted to change their encryption to quantum safe. And they were really thinking about the short term without telling that sometimes there are pieces of information that you want to keep longer than just a few years. And really the timeline of the NSA related to quantum computing encryption is 2025 to 2030, so 15 to 20 years from now, they're worried that quantum computers would be around. If you read between the line, maybe in the next, I have a few slides which says the thing from the NSA website. I'll try to track it down on my computer and show this to you maybe sometime next week, or maybe next Friday we can talk about this. But today we're gonna look at a different algorithm called the Grover algorithm. And the basic idea is you have a database, and it's a very simple case of a search that you want to do. You have a database where all the elements are marked zero, except one, which is marked one. And your job is to find where the one is, okay? Find a marked element in a database or a function which would be zero everywhere except the one, and we want to find it. And I put this in quote because we assume that the number of elements in that database is capital N. So the scale of the problem, we would typically think log of N. And the algorithm of Grover is not going to be polynomial log of N, but it'll be like a square root of N. And I'll give you an argument of how this works. So it's not as powerful as other, but searching is something which is pervasive. This is what Google does day long. So if you could find a way to speed up searching, this can have real practical applications. Now the thing which is a little bit, an example that sometimes people give of what is this, an example practical application of this marked element is, suppose you have a telephone book, and usually we look at the name of people and we find the phone number. But suppose you do the other way around. I give you a phone number and I ask you what is the name that corresponds to it. The names are sorted in alphabetical order, so you don't have to go through all the names when you go through. You kind of say, okay, you want to find this Laflamme guy. So Laflamme is halfway through the alphabet, so you open the telephone book roughly in the middle. Oh, okay, you're at M, so you know you're a little bit before you estimate where L should be, you go there. And then you get LU, so you have to go a little bit before because it's LA. So with not too many queries, you kind of can figure out where the Laflamme A without having to go through all the database. If I give you a phone number, then yeah, there's no structure in there. And that's what it makes this problem hard if you don't have a structure. Now, if you do this with a quantum computer, the equivalent of it, you would have to put all these database elements in your memory of a computer. And this would be exponentially hard. So maybe you don't really gain by doing it once. But maybe if you do the search again and again and again, which is what you do with a phone book, then maybe at that point it could be useful. But you have to be careful of thinking about all the pieces. If you add inputting the element of the database, then it has to be of that size. Now, I told you that Grover tells us square root of 2, but you compare this to what? So if you have a search of n elements, which is totally unstructured, you can show that typically it will take you order of n to find the element. And I think it's n over 2, the probability. So you'll be lucky from time to time. A little bit of luck will help you to kind of get and about n over 2. So you get, if n is equal to 4, it doesn't help you very much. But if n is billions, then this can help. So I'm going to explain to you the Grover algorithm by first giving you a geometric picture of what the algorithm does without telling you exactly how all the pieces fit together, but to give you how does suddenly you get nearer and nearer to that element by doing a few trials. And then I'm going to go and do the maths behind and kind of see how it works. Okay. Number two is I'm going to tell you about Grover's black box. And then phase kickback. And then another view of another geometric view, slightly different way of thinking about it, so you'll be able to compare it. Doesn't seem to make much sense to you right now what I write, but as you expand things, you'll understand what I mean. And then the algorithm itself. Okay, so I'll do step by step. So first, I have 2 page 1. I'll put them in superposition, and you'll go much faster. Suppose that the mark element is described by a vector omega. So I'm thinking about, again, having state x, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then 17 is on. So we have omega, and we have something which is perpendicular to omega. And then I give you a state which is easy to reach, psi, which has a non-zero overlap with omega. Okay? And if I make a superposition of the state 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, up to n, then I'll have to have a very small overlap with omega because omega is one of these numbers. Okay? And then I bring two operations. Ux, or I think I called it uf in the next page. It's the reflection around omega. Okay? And then I take the minus sign of it. The minus sign of a vector is just the opposite part. And then I have another one, which is the reflection around psi. And my claim is that if you can construct these two operations and you do UF V, and then you do it K time, and K is to be determined, then you're going to go there. You'll have to stop at some point. But if you have an idea of where to stop, then you'll know. So here's the picture. I take a reflection around omega. So this gives me a vector which is roughly like this. So I take the negative part. The positive part remains the same. I get there. And I take the minus part of it. So I go here. So if the angle here is theta, this is theta. Okay? And then I'm going to do a reflection around V. So, sorry, around psi. So psi is here. My vector is here, so I make a reflection. So now I'll be 2 theta, psi prime. Okay? And then I'm going to do this again. Make the reflection. It's going to go there. Reflection again. And then it's going to go like this. And I'm going to move there. And when k theta is equal to pi over 4, I'm done. Okay? So, by having this, you've done Grover's algorithm. You look serious. So that's the geometric way. So I'm going to now go back and then fill out this form of where the UF, where the V comes from, how can I rethink about these rotations and put the pieces together.
So is omega the state that we're trying to find?
Omega is the state that you want to find. So omega is the Mach number. So this, I said 17, so in the Silbert place is pointing there. And as we rotate more and more, the state that we started with psi is rotated towards omega. And when the probability is very near omega, then that is this vector aligned, then you're good.
So how do you reflect about an unknown state?
I'm going to show you. Okay. Okay, so we have this function. And I talk about the black box. So we're thinking that I mentioned black box before, that we have a black box which takes some state y and an input b here and an output y, and this is b plus the function f of x. Okay?
X or y?
Y is some input.
So why would you have x?
What's x?
Very good. You're awake. And it's f of x because I wrote x here instead of y, but then I didn't want to confuse this x with. Oh, I've not mentioned x yet, so that would have been okay. So U of F, so F of x or F of y is equal to 0 for y not equal to omega, the one that we want, is equal to 1 for y equal to omega. Okay? So we can define a good state. Okay, which is the state omega, and a bad state, which is 1 over square root of n minus 1 sum over x, not equal to omega, of x. Okay. And then we can make the state, we start with the state 0. We do it at MR n time, and we get the sum 1 over square root of big N of x equal to 0 to n minus 1. So the at MR is n, which is the log of the big N of this. So we've seen it's the same trick we've used for factoring. Okay. And this is equal to 1 over square root of n of omega plus n minus 1 n. That. And this state is perpendicular to that one. Okay. And you can see, and we'll call the state psi. And so most of the amplitude is in the bad part, and small piece is in the good part, and this is what I tried to depict here. Now we add one more register, so we can use this function here, and we're going to call this u of f. Okay? And so u of f is going to give, on the state psi, is going to give me 1 over square root of n, 1, plus n minus 1 over n square root psi bad, or sometimes I'll put write it as perpendicular 0. And what I would like to do is, instead of having a register which is different from one place to the other, I'd like to get the same state, but that this thing would give me the sum over x now I'll give you the b of minus 1 to the f of x. So I want to change the value of this register to a phase. Okay? And this piece is called the phase kickback. Quantum circuit, I do a control knot. If suddenly I flip the bit here by doing x, then definitely the final bit would be flipped, but this one will be flipped at the wrong time. So this is equivalent to something like this, okay? And you can check this out by doing this. And then go and calculate this. And remember, when you look at teleportation for KLM, then we add things which were conjugated, and we had something which are similar to this. They were not control knot, they were control signs, but it was the same idea. So that's not surprising that if you make an error before the control knot, the two things flip. Now, this is not the one I want to show you. Now, this one is intuitive. The one, if you are a classical person, which is not intuitive, is what happens if you have a control Z here. This is equivalent to this, and what on that side? Okay. So let's look at an example. Suppose I have 0 plus 1 as my first qubit as a control, and 0 plus 1 in the target. And now I'm going to put Z2 on the second target. So I have 0 plus 1, 0 plus 1. And this gives me 0 plus 1, 0 minus 1. Okay. And then, so we have 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 0, plus 0, 1, plus 1, 0, minus 1, 1. Now we do the control knot. So this is 0, 0, plus 0, 1, plus 1, 1, plus minus 1, 0. Okay? And I claim that this is equal to Z1, Z2. This state. This what?
Don't you need to apply a C
naught
to the state
before you apply it? Yeah, in the C naught on the state. Okay? And you can go and work the details of this. Okay? So that this is Z1, Z2 on the control knot of this, which means that the correction which is here is really Z1, Z2. Oh, Z2, Z1. And if you're a quantum person, you're not totally surprised. If you're a classical person, you should be a little bit surprised because this is the target who seems to be deciding what you're doing in your control knot. And the control is, the target is just getting something. Being passive, receiving whatever the control tells you what to do, but a phase error on the target gets kicked back in a phase in the control. Okay? There's a way to understand this. You remember a control knot is a control sign with LMRs. The control sign can be flipped. Now, I don't have my note on this, so I might have made a mistake, but you guys should watch on me. So I can flip it this way, new control Z, and then I have LMR and LMR. Okay, so this is a control knot. The LMR, I think, can disappear, and this gives me and so if I do a Z gate in there, it's transformed because of the LMR into an X. The X is going to do these things the wrong time. And then when you get the X, which is here, it goes back to a Z. But because you've done the Z at the wrong time, it's at the Z there, and then you can undo it. Did you guys follow this? Not sure? Okay.
That's not the way I would have done it.
You can do it the way you want. So the only point I'm trying here is that you can do it without having to do any matrix multiplication. The easy part, if you want to be straightforward, multiply your matrix, you'll see the equality. But the control X, my point here is that we have this. The control X can be turned into this. The control Z can be flipped the other way around because the control Z is symmetric. We've seen this. Okay? The Z that goes through, Z times X, H is equal to H times X. And then this flips this Z at the wrong time. So that will add a Z, and that's how you get Z1, Z2. At least, this is my way of looking at it without doing too much calculation. You guys should go and check this out. But the important point is that the Z on the, something like this gives you the feed there. So it's a phase kickback. And we've seen a little bit of this. When we finished the NMR, there was a circuit with a bunch of unit, one qubit in kind of with a little bit of polarization, all the other ones in a mixed state. And suddenly we were doing a unitary transformation in the bottom part. And then when you go and observe the thing, we get observing the first qubit, the trace of this U, it was some kind of a generalization of this phase skip back was there. So if you had seen it a little bit, but here's the example of how to do this. Okay? So now, let's go back to our algorithm. We have omega here, and we've seen what UF does on that state. Oh, there should be a state 0 here. So instead of starting with the state 0, we're going to start with a different state at the bottom. Okay, we're going to start with a state which is 0 minus 1, or ZX, a superposition, times a superposition. We'll have that phase there coming to the top if something happened to your system. So if you look now at this, okay, and we apply UF, my claim is that you'll get this as the answer. And if you have psi bad, UF, then you get psi bad minus. Now, the bottom part is obvious, because U on psi bad just gives you psi bad. Okay? So it doesn't change. But so we just have to look at this one. Okay? Minus is 0 minus 1. Okay? And what does UF does? It adds. If I have y and we'll have a 1, we'll have essentially an x rotation here. So the 0 will become a 1, and the 1 becomes a 0. And then I get my minus phase that I mentioned here. Okay? So we're going to use this part.
What is omega in the exponent of minus 1?
You're right. That's the right thing.
This UF is like a controlled knot where the query is it omega or not?
That's it. So it controls the second state, it flips the second state if the element in here is the chosen element. So it's our black box that we, the black box there at the top, right, on the first. And because I mentioned these black box, so I don't have to make the circuit on it, I'm just telling you what is the unitary transformation that comes in. Okay. Okay. So now we're going to look at a way of looking at what is this UF. Okay? And I'm going to look at it in this X basis. And here I'm going to put the amplitude, and this is the value of X. Okay. So for the state psi, the amplitude is all equal to start with and is equal to 1 over square root of n. This is the state psi that we started with. Okay. And what does UF does is that it takes, let's say this is the omega element, and multiply by a minus. So under UF, this piece is going to become negative. Okay. Thank you. now we want to know, what is this V that we've talked about? Oh, and I should have written here that we think when we have written UF is the unit matrix minus 2 omega. Okay? And if you plug this on with the UF on the state there, you see that indeed it does the same thing. It doesn't do anything if you have something which is perpendicular. But if you get that state, you get the minus 2, but there's a 1 there, minus 2, plus 1, minus 1, which is what I've depicted here. OK. The V operation turns out to be an Adamard transform of an operation we call U0 perpendicular, and the Adamard again. And U0 perpendicular is an operation which takes, if you have an x, it's going to bring it to minus x. And if you have a 0, it remains 0. And the application of the MR to this operation, what it does is that it takes all the elements in x and make a reflection around the mean of the average values of the amplitude. Okay? So I'm going to give you a 2-qubit example of this. So we have, and it's possible to rewrite this as 2 psi, psi, minus 1. Okay? And what I want to show is that the effect, let's say on a state like omega, will be to reverse it around, I won't calculate the mean, but you'll see that it reversed one of the element. And then it will bring down all these amplitude down, and then pick this one, and then boost it a little bit. Okay? Which corresponds to doing the second piece of the rotation over there, the 2 theta. It increases the probability of getting omega a little bit at the expense of decreasing the part which is perpendicular, and the part which is perpendicular as support on all these elements there. Okay? So just let's look a little bit of it works. I'm going to give you an example. So after having reversed it, UF on omega would look like, and let's assume that we're going to pick our omega at random, which is the mark element, which is 3. So the state, which is UF on psi, will be equal to 1 of 1 plus 2 minus 3 plus 4. Okay? So psi at the plus, we apply UF, it gives us the minus. And now I want to apply the V, which is here, UF on psi. And this is V, which is 1 over square root of 2 of psi minus 2, the state 3. So I'm just rewriting this piece here in terms of the state psi that we have, subtracted 2 times 3. And the reason why I'm writing it this way is that when you multiply with these terms, it's easier to do this and this than just expand this at length. I have less numbers. So this is the psi, and this is a piece which is kind of left over. So now I'm going to apply this to this operator there. So this piece here, multiplied by this and this, gives me, again, psi, 2 minus 1. It gives me 1. Now I have the square root of 2 to keep my normalization, and I get this. The second piece is this part here. Now I'm looking at, I've done this 10 minutes ago and I have a mistake. So I, in my notes, said that this is perpendicular to this, so I should get 2 times 3. And then I'm not exactly correct because there's an overlap between this and this, which gives me one more term. So I have a part, there's a this which multiplied by this. There's a plus, so psi is equal to 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4. 1 over 2. Okay? So let's multiply this by this 3 times on the other side. So I should get psi. Okay. I'm going to screw up with my calculation. I will get back to you with the answer, which is correct. But once you get to the answer, and I do apologize for that to do it at the last minute, what you will get at the end is that the amplitude with this one, which is at the bottom, all the ones which are not marked are going to shrink, are going to be symmetric with respect to the average. So you'll get something which is a little bit smaller. And then this one, because of this minus sign being reversed in here, then you get something which is a little bit higher. And then you're going to do the process again and again and again. By bringing this down, you reduce the average amplitude a little bit. So these ones are going to go down. And then you do the second operation V that brings it back up. And this one is going to slowly creep up the same way as we see it from the different geometric picture. Okay? So that is the idea. So for the next 20 minutes, let's go and do this the hardcore way through all the elements and details. So we have the state psi, uf on psi. And UF has been defined up there this way here. We have V, which is defined this way. So we're going to just work out a bunch of small pieces. UF of psi is equal to 1 minus 2 omega and psi. And this is it. Is equal to psi minus 2 over square root of n of omega. Okay, so it's the same, but we reverse that part here. V on psi is equal to 2 psi minus 1 of omega, and this is equal to 2 over square root of n of psi minus omega. If you do V on psi is equal to psi, and then UF on omega is equal to minus omega. Once you see this, you realize that these operations that we do just are always in remain in the same two-dimensional subspace of omega and omega perpendicular.
I have a bit of confusion in your second line. You have V on psi x on the SP of omega. Omega or psi?
Good. Okay. So we're always in the psi omega subspace. So now we're going to do one thing, right? Psi, which is equal to what we've shown already, omega plus n minus 1 over n. Omega perpendicular. Okay? So once we have this, this omega perpendicular is the sum of 1, 2, 3 up. You don't include the omega and up to n. Okay? Once you write this, you see that you can define an angle, sine of theta over omega, plus cos of theta of omega perpendicular. And this is what I showed at the top. And what I want to do is to show that these two operations are corresponding to rotate that state. Okay. So in that basis, UF, which is equal to 1 minus 2 omega omega, is equal to this matrix. Okay, if you have omega, it gives a minus sign. If you have omega perp, you remain in the same. V, which is equal to 2 psi psi minus 1, we can write it knowing that psi is equal to this. Okay, so now we take the state, so this is the unit matrix, and this is the ket and the bra put together. And if you write all of this in detail, you'll get that sine squared, sine theta cos theta, sine theta cos theta, and cos squared of theta is a factor of 2, and then minus 1, 0, 0, 1, which is the unit matrix. Okay. And then you bring this in here, sine squared minus 1, and cos squared minus 1. Now you have to remember your trigonometric function, that sine squared theta minus 1, if I'm OK, and oh, there's a factor of 2, OK? This should be equal to minus cos of 2 theta. Okay? So this matrix here gives you something which looks like cos of 2 theta, sine of 2 theta, sine of 2 theta, cos of 2 theta. Okay? So now, if you multiply this by this, then you multiply the minus sign, this will become a plus, and then a minus, and this, these ones remain the same. When you multiply this piece on the right, and you get that this is cos of 2 theta, sine of 2 theta, and sine of 2 theta, cos squared theta, and there's a minus sign here and here, and then there's a question for you. So get ready. When you look at this, what does that matrix tell you? It's a rotation by 2 theta, which is what I showed you at the top. Okay? So as you apply this again and again and again on that side psi.
So shouldn't the bottom be sine squared theta or sine 2 theta? Question.
You guys should check this out. That's not his job. It's a 2 there.
But is it sine or cos though?
So it's cos theta, sine of 2 theta, minus sine of 2 theta, cos of 2 theta. Right? If theta is 0, you want to have 1, 1, so that the vector doesn't move.
But you started with sine squared theta and cos squared theta.
So you think I've made a mistake here? So sine squared, cos squared.
Just cos, 2 cos squared minus 1.
There's a sine squared, a cos squared here.
It's cos squared minus sine squared.
But it gives you a different sign here. So if you have 2 cos squared theta minus 1, that should be cos of 2 theta.
Minus.
Sorry?
1 minus 2 cos squared theta.
Sorry,
never mind.
Okay.
No,
I'm wrong,
so okay. Is the one that comes there. I think that's okay. This in front of a board, it's always hard to get the sign right, but I'll double check, but I think this is right. Compared to this, which needs a little work out. Okay, so then we do understand that this is a rotation. This is a rotation that I mentioned before. And this happens by doing this UF and this V, this rotation around these different angles. And so the question now is, we know what the initial theta is, because the initial theta is the overlap of the mark system with the hold state. And because it is, we know we have only one mark system, mark element, it has to be 1 over square root of n. And then when do we stop? Then I told you it's when k theta is equal to pi over 4. And theta is 1 over square root of n. So the number of iteration is pi over 4 square root of n. Okay? So in square root of n step, we've taken this vector and we brought it to this mark element, not knowing what it is. We've done these rotations. But the trick that we have in here is that we have this black box that we can go in and ask. So we don't know what the element is, but the black box tells us, if we make a query to that black box, it tells us. If we do this one by one and ask, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, it'll take us a step, about n step. But when we make superposition of state, which is what we started here, we can use this amplitude, amplification, where, and by this I mean the amplitude of epsilon, of omega grows faster than the other part, and then we get in the right direction. Okay. So that's the basic idea of Grover's algorithm. Couple of comments. You might ask the question, can you do better? Like, is there an algorithm? In this particular one, people can show that you cannot do better than square root of n. There's a bound. In fact, I don't know exactly how the computer scientists prove this myself, but they come about and they say, this is the best you can do. And then you can generalize this as to cases also, if you have more than one mark element, find one. Then this amplitude will be different and you can show that you can do this also. So this is the idea behind the Grover's algorithm. And it's Friday, so for once, I finish before time. Question?
In your V, the definition of V, what are the Hadamard's acting
on? So repeat the question.
On which Hilbert space is the Hadamard acting
on? So my X, my state psi is written either in this way or I can write it in binary. So it's being applied on the binary version of these numbers.
But then would it be h to the power of n smaller?
Yeah. Good point. Let's generalize that one.
Yes. So that relation k theta equals to pi by 4.
Speak louder.
The relation k theta equals to pi by 4.
Yeah.
So because k is an integer, we won't exactly get it, and there would be some error. So could we correct that in the end? Like, because we would still have non-zero amplitudes, probably.
Yeah, so you might get near it, but not exactly. But because that error is small, you can repeat the thing a few times and then get near it. Okay.
One more thing, your view definition, U0 perpendicular?
U0 perpendicular. So,
k of
things,
minus x. Should that be minus k of x? It's a generalized.
So it flips everything except the 0.
But I can live with that.
The definition of B, like psi is our original state that we built.
Yeah,
since we are evolving that psi, can we update our B to like, because
no,
you
keep that B.
In that case, the next jump that would you do would not be by theta, but by a bigger angle.
So the next piece would be
like your second, your psi after one iteration, theta is bigger.
So
if you update B and you perform the same operation, you should get a rotation by a bigger angle.
You would have a theta that you add at every step. Okay, so I'm a little puzzled by the factor of two, but we've moved from being at theta to two theta by doing one step of this loop of doing UF and V. You do another one, it'll be again at theta further down, or two theta from psi, and it'll be at three theta from psi, four theta from psi, and then you do this until you arrive to pi over four. So you just added all of that similar. So you're not doubling. So if you would rewrite this as psi prime, then you would kind of exponentiate it. But then I think you, there must be a way of showing that you cannot do that. Because then you wouldn't do it in screwed of n, but you would have an exponential gain. Right now, I don't see it. I don't have the exact answer of saying why you cannot do this. But this one, we know what it is. And so,
I still know 100% sure about the setup. Is it that we know what omega is and we're trying to find where it is? Or do we not know what?
You don't know where omega is. Okay? You don't know where it is. You don't know what is the value of omega. Let's say it's 17. The person in the black box, or the black box knows it's 17. You don't know what it is. But you can make a query to the black box. Okay?
So the output is the number 17?
No. The function is 0. If you have a number which is not 17.
Sorry, but the output of the entire algorithm, algorithm.
Yeah, the output of the algorithm is at the end you get a state which is in the direction of your number. You'll get omega, which is 17.
So, the analogy between the phone book then is not really clear to me. Because I thought the idea was that we want to find a particular number and we want to know how it corresponds to the name, for example.
So the analogy of the phone book is, in reverse, is that it's a totally unstructured search. And you don't know where the element is. So you could look at the names and you pick the names one by one. Okay, you say Aggie, 0 or 1. The chances you won't be the right one. So you can ask all the names. The names are there in your database. But you don't know what telephone number corresponds until there's the match.
Okay, so the question is, what number is the marked element, and then the output of Grover's algorithm is 17. The unmarked element is at position 17.
So you do not know what the name is, except the black box knows.
So that would be an input of a black box.
It's what?
You could make that an input for your black box.
Yeah, in your black box, you can say the name of anybody in the room. Okay? And then when you say a name, I'm going to say to you 0 or 1. And then you have to end up with 1.
And so omega corresponds to the name in this case?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one name.
Okay.
And with the phone book analogy is that you have a piece of data which
yeah.
doesn't correlate in one way. That's mm-hmm. the, you know.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, so next week on Monday, we'll look at open quantum systems. So what happens, right now we assume we could do these unitary transformation all the time. We'll look at what happens when our system is not open. So we'll look at density matrices, look a little bit at their properties. I might mention process of doing tomography. If somebody has a state that they can prepare, and then they can send you copies of them, how do you evaluate what the state is? And there's a second iteration of this is, if I give you a state or a process instead of a state, it can be unitary or it can be non-unitary. So there is a map that you do from the state to the final state. I have a process which does that. How do you describe that process? And here's a question for the weekend. If you have one qubit, how many parameters do you need to describe a single qubit process, which doesn't have to be unitary? So I'll help you with one piece. If you do a unitary transformation, it's really a map of the surface of the Black Sphere to the surface itself. How many parameters do we need to describe this?
Two or one?
Okay, what is the generic unitary transformation for one qubit? Okay, but how do we write it? E to the minus I, theta over 2, and dot sigma, right? So how many parameters do we have in here? N is nx, ny, n0, which defines the angle, the direction on which you rotate, you make the rotation. But there's a constraint that nx squared plus ny squared plus nz squared is equal to 1. So there's two parameters, which describe a vector on which you rotate around. And there's a third parameter here. So we need three parameters to describe a unitary transformation from one qubit. Now suppose that the operation is not unitary. How many? And it's not an easy question, but try something.
Is it four? Is it four?
Four?
Because in principle, non-unitary was going to change the length of the vector.
Absolutely. But you remember when we talked, when we talked about an MR, did we use these words T1 and T2, which correspond to some decoherence? People give you two numbers, they should be independent. So there should be at least five, but there's more. So I'm gonna give you the geometric picture. Again, our idea of Black Sphere. When we do a unitary transformation, we rotate the sphere to another sphere. And we've just said, give me an angle, a direction, given by n, rotate around theta. If it's non-unitary, you're going to take the surface of the sphere and you're going to shrink it, as you remember. But you can shrink it in different ways, right? And it doesn't need to remain a sphere. And so it's going to correspond to some ellipsoid in there.
So in principle, it's infinity then? If you do some kind of really crazy deformations?
It's the number of parameters. So these values are continuous, but no, they are discrete. Because, again, it's not the value of the parameters, it's the number of them. So in here, you had three. how many function do I need to describe?
So,
it could be infinite.
Are we speaking of linear transformations still?
Yeah. So a generic transformation, okay, if it is unitary, it is of this form. And do you know, have you seen maybe in foundations of quantum mechanics, what is the generalization when it's not?
General linear matrices.
Yeah, so you know it's linear because it's quantum mechanics, linear in row, but there's some constraint. So if you don't know this, then my question is a bit unfair. And the first thing we'll do Monday morning is to describe what happens when this is not unitary. So you replace this, and it turns out one way of looking at this is that it's multiplied by operators like this, which are called Krauss operator, and there's a constraint in these Krauss operators that AI is equal to one. But this is linear, so you can think about this as, instead of thinking from a qubit as a matrix which is 2 by 2, I'm going to reorganize it. And so a generic matrix is 1/2 plus alpha x plus beta y plus delta z. I'm going to write my density matrix as a vector, half alpha beta gamma. And this thing now looks like a matrix, which is equal to the final part. And what I'm asking you is, how big is that matrix, and how many elements are there, considering the constraint? So now I have helped you a little bit. And you don't, if it's a beautiful sunny day, enjoy the sun. Well, during your walk, you can think about it.